beginning of time, our very humanity has been based on connecting at the cellular level. Today, connecting on a cellular level has taken on a different meaning.
Able to hang out with us, and again, very excited to talk about feelings. As you heard in the intro there, one of the things that we've been falling into this trap over the past decade has been on looking at our technology and what it can do, and it can do these great things, and it. What I'd like to talk about and what we do here on the No App for Life podcast is talk about what I can do, what you can do, what humans can do, and the pendulum swing back a little bit more towards our human apps, what comes in us upon birth, what is already downloaded that we just need to access and use, and to understand that most of our problems today, and whether they're social issues or personal issues, from anxiety to depression to some of the mental health issues, most of that is all handled when we incorporate our human skills. So what we're talking about is there's just no app for joy, for understanding, for being understood. All of these things are going to come from our relationships with others. And, you know, we cover a lot of topics here. And today I'm really excited to have a wonderful colleague, author, Lynn Ozarki, who wrote The Empathy Advantage. And talking today about empathy, the power of it, and clearing up a lot of misconceptions that a lot of people have had when it comes to empathy. And as I was saying to Lynn right before we got started, first of all, Lynn, welcome to the No App for Life podcast. Thank you for the book. I was able to dive into it, so I have a ton of questions. Thank you for being here, and thank you for the work and passion that you have in teaching empathy to young kids and to families. So let me just start with what brought you to this passion.
Well, I have to thank you. Shout out back to you, Joni, for the work. I mean, you were on the scene really early with technology and apps and how it was influencing our children and media literacy. So you are one of the first. Thank you for the work that you did. It's a platform upon which I'm building, because we need to do a better job of helping parents and educators. So we're in this together. So my journey with empathy started, I guess, probably 15 years ago. So for 18 years, I've been director of Kidsbridge Tolerance Center in New Jersey. Our mission is bullying prevention, diversity appreciation, social emotional for skills to inspire kindness, respect, and all the things, all the social emotional skills that kids need today. So 15 years ago, you know, in the world of social emotional skills, and Kidsbridge educates 2,500 kids a year. It used to be face-to-face, so now we're doing it, you know, on the virtual platform, is that I realized that empathy was the foundation for all social emotional skills. Empathy being self-compassion for yourself, compassion for other people, empathy for other people, and I felt this was the platform. So we were teaching it through our activities face-to-face with kids in small groups and not in assembly programs. I don't believe in assembly programs. I don't think they teach much of anything in terms of social emotional skills. And I figured out we were teaching it, I had to measure it. And I went around, I looked online for research, and I talked to some of my colleagues. What naysayers? You can't teach empathy. No one's taught empathy. It's, you know, you're born with what you're born with, you know, end of story. So I felt that was like,
I want to interject here. I was because I noticed you address that in the first chapter of your book.
Yes.
I never thought that you couldn't teach empathy. So I was surprised that you were making this case for people saying that that empathy can't be taught. I'm like, wait a minute. I believe I've been teaching it for over 18 years now. So I was shocked that
yeah.
you were showing research that educators are saying you can't teach empathy, which
I guess it's the old nature versus nurture discussion. Right. Some people on one side, the other side. And truly, we know we can teach children today. So I was dared, you know, you can't do it. So very little research. And then, so Kids Bridge at times can be a 4-hour field trip for kids. So the kids would come in, didn't talk to them, pre-survey. Last thing before they left, post-survey. Analyze the data for findings, statistically significant improvements in attitude. And we were measuring, not right away, you know, we had to figure out the questions and the measures and the blah, blah, blah. It went into an analytical database and we're finding statistically significant improvements in empathy. So now I know in 4 hours, if KidsBridge can do it, parents and educators can do it. Educators can do it in the classroom. And parents have an even better shot because they have the kids, you know, for years and years, parents can do it at home. And I felt that looking around, not seeing that this is what I wanted to help parents. And I wanted to sort of announce that to the world. And how do you do that? You write a book to get people's attention. And here I am with you.
Beautiful. And that word has been really reaching the height of social consciousness in the past 4 years now, where I believe in the beginning days of the Trump administration, they didn't really know the man, his leadership style. We were kind of like, well, wait a minute. He's kind of, all right, he's got a different style. Maybe he's not Mr. Warm and Fuzzy. So the first sort of year was people trying to figure, and then it just got blatant with there is no empathy coming from this administration. The policies that were being pushed were dramatically shocking. The news coverage of the children and the immigration policies, and you heard every single writer and broadcast journalist saying, have you no empathy? You know, how could you be putting these policies? And I think we were still in shock that anyone could create something with such a callousness and uncaring as a policy that I don't think we could really wrap our heads around for a while. So this word empathy kept popping up a lot.
I would say right now, the last year, I think I've heard it on the news every day.
Right?
Every day.
But there, Lynn, to focus a book on then. Right?
Well, my husband and I look at each other when the word, you know, it's like high five, empathy. Right. I'm a Joni, like every day.
Right, so, right.
That people, I think, now recognize it's more important. So empathy can be taught. And then my message to parents and educators is, it's not rocket science. You can do it. You can do it. You can measure it. And please make it fun, right? Like right. family meetings. You can have an empathy assignment or an empathy family meeting every week, 20 minutes. Make it fun. Make it engaging. You know about this active listening, right?
Right.
How challenging is it? Put your cell phone down. The benefits of face-to-face communication, active listening with your body language, that you're really paying attention to all of your family members. And another tip in my book is to chart what is your face-to-face time during the week, what is your cell phone usage during the week. People are unaware, and then, you know, parents modeling this addiction to the phone is a role model because our children are watching us carefully. So let me just quickly share the benefits of empathy because
Yeah, and right before that, let's do the why. like, why are we? We know that there are benefits. Why is empathy now so front and center? What was this void of empathy from a cultural standpoint? And now that we have a president, a leader who everyone describes President Biden, which I'm thrilled to be able to say that. You can't say President Biden without saying, or Joe Biden without saying, empathetic, compassionate.
Right.
So before we get into the nitty gritty of the lessons for our kids
and parents,
family,
yeah.
Can we just talk about the broad?
All right. So let's look at how divisive it is today, right? We're two tribes, yes. Right? And so two tribes, divisive society, and yet we're all Americans, and this is the language that President Biden uses. Let's work together. Let's stop this divisiveness, because this will trickle down to our children, and so it continues to be divisive. So I think it's such a powerful strategic tool that you can use in so many things, not only educating your children, but it is a tool today. I have a friend, the empathy guy, I don't know if you've heard of him, Edwin Rooch, and he uses empathetic listening circles, and he brought together people from both different sides into an empathy tent, and they listened to each other, active listening, and by the end of the time, even though they didn't agree, they were hugging each other. So truly combining empathy with active listening, with strategic tools, I think today, after 4 years of, you know, divisiveness, I think it really is a wonderful tool to think about. And here's how you do it. You walk in the shoes of the other person. You walk in the shoes of a worker who has no job, who's out of work. You walk in the shoes of a Black mother who is afraid for her children. You walk in the shoes of a Native American who the COVID rates for Native American tribes are highest, you know, in the country. You walk in the shoes, you walk in the shoes. So when you walk in the shoes of another person, you feel empathy for them. And then you just don't feel like this, it opens up. There's not this wall, there's a window, there's connections. You agree what you have in common. So I really, in my heart, believe it's such an important tool for today. We have our mind and our heart. We need both to bridge this divide today.
You know what I thought that just blew me away and had me thinking about you when I was watching one of the interviews with the police officer who ended up being dragged by the rioters at the Capitol and really thought that he was going to be beaten to death. And he fought this whole thing through, going, how am I going to get out of this? And the only thing he could think of was, can I appeal to somebody's empathy, perhaps? And he said, I have kids.
Wow.
And that was the only thing. He just said, I can't use my gun. I can't, it'll turn on me. But I thought it was so profound. And I was reading your book when I was watching the interview. And here I'm going, you know, that must be such an inherent concept for somebody to look at people that were beating him up and say, maybe I can reach them on an empathetic level.
That gives me chills. That gives me chills. So the people who were beating him, they have children.
Right.
So they walked in his shoes in a millisecond and they realized, this is not the enemy. This is a father. This is a husband. And look how powerful that is. It reminds me, there's another thing in my book back during suffrage. And, you know, men don't want to give women the vote, right? And so one of the suffragettes got up on the stage and said, you know, we represent your daughters and your wives and your cousins. And there was a gestalt that people walked in the shoes. Yeah, you know, when it becomes personal. So thank you for sharing that story. Very powerful.
So when we talk about rising the awareness of this very human skill, this very human character trait that, as you were talking about, it's, you know, nature versus nurture. Yeah, we're all on the spectrum of, you know, hopefully, unless you're a psychopath, a sociopath, you know, that's a different topic there. But if you can, you know, for the majority of people, most people, we all have somewhere in that level. But you're talking about with the education and the actual lesson plans, you can move that. You can not be, oh, well, this is what you're born with and that's it. You can move it, right?
You can move the needle for sure. Yeah. So let me start with the bad news, because I want parents, adults, and teachers to have their eyes wide open on this. Oh, empathy, you know, it's nice. I'll get around to it. You know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. But academics and grades are improved on a foundation of social emotional skills that a child feels confident, self-compassion, and it enables the child to learn. But let me get the bad news out of the way, because in inculcating empathy, you can surmount these problems. Empathy is declining. They are measuring it in college students and high schoolers and younger. It's declining. Why do you think it's declining? I mean, this is what you do, Joni. How can you, I'm holding up my cell phone, right? How much empathy can you have when you're on your phone and addicted to your phone? Children's face-to-face skills, again, because of the media, are declining. Bullying and cyberbullying rising. Much easier to bully online, and most of our kids are, you know, stuck at home with a remote learning. And the other concept I want to introduce, which people know and don't talk about, we are a bystander society. We need to teach our children empathy and then empathic action. We need to do this better, to stand up and speak out, to stand up and speak out against racism, intolerance, stereotypes. So we have our work ahead of us, but strategically with empathy as a platform, your kids are gonna have fun, learn better, and again, springboard from this wonderful foundation of social emotional skills.
As a college professor, I'm watching the trends of the digitally socialized population. And one of the questions that I ask all the time is, how can the most connected population of young people, most digitally connected, be the loneliest population? And again, that goes back to my work of a decade here, is if you're communicating and not getting your needs met, meaning you're not understanding me, I need to be understood, that's where we fall into this very lonely place, that all the likes and the what you're thinking might be relevant likes to make you feel more relevant in the world, it just doesn't feed the soul.
Right.
The way one person who says, I'm going to give you my time to try to understand you. It's that simple. But how do we break through the noise of there's an app for everything, Lynn? You know, how do we push the power of human connection when everyone's making millions of dollars by a new app?
I think that the knowledge and the science of algorithms is very helpful to know. And I don't want to scare anyone with that big fancy word. But if they, as you understand, and this is the work you do, that kids are no longer curating what they would like to look at, it is curated for them. And so they are, you know, it just becomes a narrower their view and their ken of what they're seeing. And so they're being fed things that they had seen before, maybe what their friends are seeing. And so again, this balance in the home where there's a limited amount of hours on the phone, more face-to-face time, more family time, you know, walks, go to the zoo, aquarium. And I know it's more challenging with COVID, but you know, we're not going to get rid of smartphones. We realize that, but it's something that parents need to be in charge of their household and they need to do. Getting back to what we talked about last week, you know, the loneliness of college students who are, you know, stressed and anxious for likes and Facebook, and then kids are starting earlier on the phone. The beauty of empathy coming in to the rescue is to have conversations and use it in activities and exchanges to increase self-compassion. I mean, you were telling me last week, college students need more self-compassion, right?
Right.
They're not going to get that from their phone. They're not going to get that from an app. They're going to get it in a conversation with a human being. I got very distressed about middle schoolers. They break up a relationship on their cell phone. Like, are you kidding me? It's a human being. So that lack of empathy I find extremely distressing, which is why if we could start younger, KidsBridge teaches preschoolers empathy and social emotional skills. You can never start too young. You know, your face-to-face skills with a baby, stop using the media as babysitter to start younger and more consistently so that by the time they're in college, they're not getting their love and adoration, you know, from an app or from or cell phone. It's just not going to work.
Well, the thing that I'm excited to talk to you about, and I know one of the challenges that we have is we have a lot of services. KidsBridge is great. There is a lot of Screen Time Action Network. We've got a lot of services where parents understand how important it is to, with young kids, no screen and limiting that. I think the bigger challenge, and maybe this is something that we could talk about or find a way to collaborate or whatever, is all of a sudden when you're from 12 years to 18, right? So parents have less power over kids with their media consumption at that age. And that's where the problems really do start. I had a college kid tell me, he was so cute. He was like, you know, I grew up and, you know, just when I was getting into middle school, I was really good talking to girls. Like I felt like I was good and I kind of had my work down. And then all of a sudden everything went to texting. And he's like, I'm in college now. I did better and was less awkward when I was 11 than I am now.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the things that I'm finding is the skills really need to be constantly practiced and nurtured. And we need to find ways of more empathetic responsiveness within middle schools and high schools, and so that those skills are honed by the time they get to college rather than having them, you know, atrophied, right?
Yeah, if they're not going to get that from a school, which would be a shame, where the school is working as a partner to take away the phones, parents at home, like, you know, I learned so much. I made so many mistakes that I shared in my book, like dinner time. You know, my daughter I have to take this call. Like, it's so important. It's in the middle of dinner. It's like, oh, okay. One time it must be really important. And okay, another time it's important till the point that we finally, you know, put phones in the middle of the table. But I think that I didn't realize, and this is another reason I wanted to help parents and write this book, technology creeped into my house and I was not aware of it. It took over my house. And if I could go back in time, I would do it so much differently, that I want parents to be parents and be in charge of their house, right? No TVs in the bedrooms. Cell phones take them away at 9 or 10 o'clock. You know, kids are more on media than they are sleeping, right? Mm-hmm. So if the benefits will be paid back to them if they are good stewards in their home. And then, okay, the schools, like you're saying, in middle school I had, well, maybe there's too much phone usage. I bet if you walked into a middle school lunchroom, everybody would be on their phone. right? They're probably not even talking to each other.
You know, I'm trying to even get away now. When I wrote the book, I let my did the film, I let my students title it, you know, selling your, we had titles on the board. This was a total teacher-student project. And I look at it now and I'm like, and even when we came up with the title, Selling Your Soul with a C, I turned to my students, I'm like, oh, come on, guys. Like, that's really a negative. And my students were like, that's how we feel. Because people were, and I still find it today, you get older generations saying, well, this is what the kids like. They like being on their phone. And honestly, I'm here to tell you, they really don't. What they really want and what they really like is to be understood.
Right.
And we can shift it instead of making the phone the demon. When we teach, as you have in your lessons, the empathy, being able to say, you know, it's not about your phone, honey. What I really want to take 15 minutes is I really want to learn about how you got through your day today. Can you help me to understand you? Any kind of language that connects with, I'm totally invested. I'm exaggerating with my language. Clearly, you don't have to say it like that.
Right.
But with your intention of being able to say to your kid, to your friend, if you open up, right? And if you're open and inviting somebody to say, I really want to learn about you and how you're feeling, help me to understand you, you would be shocked as to how much they will put their phone away and just be like, oh, you're going to like listen to me? Like, really? Right. Like, you're.
And parents don't know this.
Right.
And caregivers don't know this. And maybe teachers, I mean, in school, they have to put their media equipment away. Let me build on what you're saying and say, in my research for the Empathy Advantage, employers are getting kids out of high school and college that do not know how to have a conversation. And I noticed this, I think, with my own kids. Again, you know, the cell phone was just taking over my house. So it's with a plan, a very simple plan to maximize your face-to-face time and minimize the electronic media time. And we haven't talked about, you know, the reality shows and the meanness and the backstabbing and the competition and the cruelty and the kicking people off and, you know, people crying and the Kardashians that really puts pressure on young girls to be just all about their appearance. Like, who's in charge? We need to be more in charge, at least of our own homes. And here's something I wanted to say before. Gather a few parents. You don't like what's going on in the school, right? You want your kids to be able to have conversations? Go get a couple parents or have coffee. Make an appointment with the principal or counselor and say, we want to know what you're doing to teach our children empathy, kindness, respect, and how to have a conversation. And you know, also segueing, bullying and cyberbullying in middle school, nasty parents, what is your school doing? Are these good programs? Are they teaching back to cell phones about addiction? Are they teaching about how algorithms, right, are entrapping children to spend more time on their phones? So there's all this stuff you and I know, but parents also need to be empowered and act to take back their homes and to work as partners with the schools.
And one of the things that I want to make sure that parents understand is we're, and I understand where parents are coming from. It's very, very scary in this day and age when we hear about when your child, and when I say child, I don't mean just younger kids, but one of the biggest issues we have now is teens and young adults with their anxiety and the panic attacks that go into it. What we're really advocating is not to create a power struggle of just take the phone away, because I don't believe in that, just taking it away. Boundaries and understanding is and the education behind and explaining the why, more than creating a power struggle for that. I mean, when we're talking about empathy, the parent conversations have to include, I can't imagine how hard it must be to be a kid today on social media.
Good, good.
A major shift from, well, when I was a kid. So what I'm hearing from young people is, you know what? It was easier for you when you were a kid. And so, as you said, Lynn, put yourself in your kids' shoes, okay? We have a population that feels like they're forced to have to be on social media, or right. they will feel ostracized from the world, right? And so between, you know, the ages of 12 to 18, that's when you're building your emotional intelligence. That's also when you're creating your autonomy. We need to shift the power struggle conversation so that you're connecting with your child in an empathetic way. Am I correct with, help me to.
And you just gave me an idea of another way, right? So you're right. You can't, you know, wrest the phone away from the, you know, because they feel their identity is who they are. Their backbone is the phone. So
but
here's
that's
a couple.
Where the empathy comes in. That is, I'm.
Right. You're walking in the shoes of your child.
Having this feeling, having this panic attack, or feeling this need to have your phone so close to you, that can't feel good, honey, right? That just can't feel good. How can we figure that out? And it was one of the issues that I had, as much as I was all about the social dilemma, explaining the algorithms and all of that,
right.
The parenting part, I was like, no, wrong. That's when I was praying that we would get more of the discussion on empathy rather than the power struggle.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of ideas. So you're empathetic. Your child feels they have to know what's going on. They have to know the most current music and shows and so on and so forth. Here's what I didn't do, right? My son is watching South Park. My son left the house. I'm an empty nester. So when he was in middle school, he's watching South Park. And South Park is for adults, and it teaches you, it makes fun of everything and everyone. Well, my son was learning how to make fun of people. So I would shut the TV off, and that didn't work, and tell him why I didn't like it, and he wasn't listening to me. Here's how I would do it today, and you can do this with your cell phone. You watch the show with your child, and you discuss it. Mm-hmm. What are they learning? What are they not learning? What are they laughing at? Excuse me. What lessons are they learning?
On the you're incorporating the media literacy angle. So to start with the intellectualizing of the content, right? So we're analyzing and we're critically saying what is the message that this movie, show, whatever we're watching,
exactly
this particular TikTok, you know, what is it that we're getting from that?
Exactly. So sit on the couch with the cell phone and see what TikToks they're looking at, if they're posting TikToks and whatever, you know, media there is. In terms of engaging, they may be reluctant to share with you some of the things, but you do want to have a check-in conversation with your child. I mean, bullying can result in death today.
Right.
And you want to have conversations with your kid. Nice tone, not angry, sharing the phone, that they know everything is permanent and that you really have to have empathy for what you're doing. A child is called gay. The child is gay or not gay, whatever. And then this child has a world upon which they can't escape because everybody is making fun of them, or the shoes are wrong, or the skin color is wrong. That you're teaching with empathy. Cell phone usage, you want your child to walk in the shoes of another child who is being bullied, excluded, made fun of. And this is a very easy conversation to have with the cell phone, right? You don't have to take it away.
We're talking to Lynn Azarkey. Did I get that right?
You did.
Okay. Author of The Empathy Advantage. One thing that is breaking my heart today is some of the parents that I've been working with, dealing with, hearing their stories.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, without empathy, people, the cyberbullying and the bullying gets so hard, it has resulted in suicides. We have another case right now, a mom who did everything, prolonged the introduction of phones until an older age. One of the things I'd like to maybe see if I can get some of your expertise. What happens when we have teens who are interacting with their so-called friends? They're in a Snapchat conversation with people that they're considering their close friends, right? And all of a sudden, something can keep going on between people. These aren't like people that I don't know, strangers from the internet. These are people that I'm trusting, that I'm assuming are my friends. And then those friends seem to be able to get extremely mean and lack a tremendous amount of empathy in these small groups, Lynn, to the point where even in a small Snapchat friend group, it has caused a suicide of one of these people within that group. I can't get over a couple of incidents that I'm dealing with right now. And as a personal empath myself, I can't get over. I mean, it just kills me. Can you fill me in on how to navigate that world when you're when the lack of empathy comes from somebody that you trust?
Right. Parents must get involved. So some of us have children. We don't call them bullies anymore. We call them those that bully, right? We don't want to categorize and label kids. So we have bullies, we have targets, we don't call them victims anymore, and we have bystanders. So a classroom, a group of kids online, people in the office, there's three different types of people. So those who harm or bully need to be taught empathy and compassion for others. We do not do a good job of this in our homes, and we don't do a good job of it in schools. We need to do a better job. The victims, what we call targets now, who is a person who could be on the edge and kill themselves, they need someone to be with them and listen to them. So the way to fix this system, everybody's going to look at those who bully. The people who bully are in charge of the system, but the majority of people are what? They're bystanders.
Okay, there you go.
That is getting my lesson right.
Right.
Right? The last 4 years, bystanders. We didn't stand up and speak up enough. And so in a school system of, say, middle school and online, it's for the bystanders that we train our middle schoolers to say, no, stop. That's not nice. I'm telling an adult. And that this is why this system is broken, that we need to, with empathy, fix this system. How do we fix the system? The group number one, the smallest group, those who harm bullies, teach them empathy for what the harm they are causing. The targets, help them with self-compassion skills. I don't deserve to be left out. I don't deserve to be excluded. I'm not going to be in this group anymore, or I'm going to join another group, or I'm going to tell an adult, right, to help me fix this system. And then for the bystanders to have the courage to stand up. Is this easy? Absolutely not. With empathy, they walk in the shoes of the target, right? Empathy is number one. Number two, empathetic action, that they speak up online, they speak up in the hall, they speak up in the classroom. And so empathy is such a strategic driver to fix the system. And this is what I'm recommending. So can parents teach this to their children at home? When you see the whole school coming after one child, I want you to let me know, or I want you to tell your teacher or your principal. We're not having conversations with our children, and we have a name for it. It's called bully side. Children as young as 8 are killing themselves. We need to care about all of our children.
I know. When I've been looking at the statistics for my upcoming research, that was insane to see that up until 2012, suicide rates were on the decline, going down, 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 right? And since the uprising of social media to younger, remember when, if you were 13, you had to like cheat your way into getting on Facebook for a while. So that was 2007 when Facebook went public, 2008, 2009, all of a sudden that was for the older people. But by 2012, you had a lot of young people on social media. And remember, those frontal lobes are not logic and emotion. What a mess between 12 and 18. Right?
Not developed yet. Correct.
Right. When... It's funny when we say like, well, what am I going to get out of learning empathy and, you know, more face-to-face? We always say your frontal lobe, that's the payoff. That's what you will get.
Let me tell you the benefits, right? Because again, I'm trying to encourage parents, the benefits of empathy in your child, increasing that quotient, better people skills, better leadership skills, more interest in community, which would improve the community, team playing skills. I mean, what's not to like? They're going to be a better employee, right?
Right.
And then people in a workplace like empathetic leaders. They're going to work harder and do more for them. So if you're looking for benefits and a payout, it's a long-term strategy to create a better person. I mean, people skills, right, are half of a job.
I'm going to even tease you with a bigger benefit, and I will tell you the story of one of my students. Once he learned empathetic responsiveness, his love life totally changed.
Wow.
So we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be back with part two with Lynn Azarkey. I'm Joni Ciani. You're listening to the No App for Life podcast. We'll be back right after this.